on Pilot TV this week, we are taking Kay back to her own personal hell in season 3 of Foundation on Apple TV+, returning to the Boshiverse for the very first season of Ballard on Prime Video, and finding out if you really can fit quicker than a quick fit fitter in Shifting Gears on Disney+. Plus, Jared Harris, Foundation's Harry Seldon himself, drops by the studio to talk to me about four-dimensional space. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that is now exactly one month away from our triumphant return to King's Place in London for our 350th episode live show. Which we are all over, which we have planned, which we have locked in, which we have scheduled to the minute. It's military precision. Mm. We are all over this shit.
Let's get real. We haven't had one meeting about this. Boyd hasn't opened his Rolodex. We are in full fall.
Okay, there's no need to lie. They just need to understand how on it we are. It's fine.
Yeah.
We are on that. We've got you covered.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, still buy the tickets. We'll sort it. Boyd will pull his finger out. James will, make up a
script. Meryl Streep is going to be there. It's going to be extraordinary. Sylvester Stallone said he'd swing by,
No pressure, Boydo. Yeah. Listen,
you should get Arnie. You know Arnie.
I'm going to call Arnie. He'll be there.
After a glowing review of
his documentary.
God.
Well, not FUBAR so much, but the documentary light. Yeah, Arnie will be there as well. All of them. Everyone. Jennifer Aniston's coming because obviously she hand-delivered the morning show to me the other week, so we're close personal friends. She'll come. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm committed to thinking of some fun franchises, and then you guys have to take care of everything else.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
I'm also committed to coming.
Yeah, well, that's a benefit. Boyd, are you coming? I mean, I don't think I've asked you.
Undecided.
Boyd's attendance may or may not be mandatory. Yeah. But look, if you haven't booked your tickets, and I strongly suggest you do, then do head over to, I think it's kingsplace.co.uk, the King's Place website. But if you Google Pilot TV 350 King's Place, you will get to the correct page and book your tickets now.
Because actually, do you know what? Actually, I think the more people that book tickets, then the pressure will just mount for us to have this meeting and to make it happen.
Yeah, that's
right?
It. Like, if you want us to get off our asses and organise what we're going to do on this show, then I suggest you buy more tickets. Like, buy them.
Otherwise,
then that will incentivise us.
Refunds are plenty.
Yeah, that's right. Kay will refund everyone out of her own pocket.
No one's got the capabilities or the know-how to do that. So we just have to get on with it.
But why wouldn't you come? Because unless you hang around outside the houses of famous people, how else would you have a one-on-one encounter with TV's Boyd Hilton?
That's true.
And unless you are personal friends with Kevin Spacey, how would you hang out with Kay Ribeiro? Like, these are opportunities you shouldn't let pass you by.
I'm not even going to...
Unless you hang out with Neil Gaiman. I mean...
Yes, Boyd! Yes!
Thank
you!
Wow!
Yes!
I can honestly say...
Worship
his show.
I have never met, nor will I ever meet.
Yeah, sure. What about that photo you've got of you two together?
Well, the tattoo on my back, full Alan Partridge style of his face. Yeah. You're a mentalist! No.
If we get enough people coming to the live event, James will show you that tattoo.
Wow!
Yeah. And have another one done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Live tattooing on stage.
Live tattooing.
Why not? That could be the forfeit.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
Well, this has taken an unexpected turn. What have we been watching this week?
I've just literally hot-footed it from hosting a screening.
Of course you have.
This morning. It was 8:40 I had to be there.
That's an early one.
Yeah.
Did you get pastries?
Was this Assassins?
Yes, The Assassin.
The Assassin. Sorry, Mr. Definite Article.
Yes, The Assassin, to give it its correct title.
I'm excited to see this.
Yeah, so now it's heavily embargoed. Which I had to, part of my duties was to tell everyone in the room it's heavily embargoed until the 25th of July or something. So I can't comment at all. But all I was going to say was I have watched half of the series, the first three episodes out of six. And all I am going to say is that it's Harry and Jack Williams of, The Missing, Boat Story. You did a Q&A, didn't you?
I did.
Yes.
With the two of them and the whole cast of Boat Story.
Yeah. I love them. Regardless,
are they good value?
Oh my God, they're so funny, and they're so kind of like Riley. They talk about their sibling relationship in the most ridiculous of terms. Like, we actually hate each other. Blah 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 blah. They take the piss out of each other relentlessly.
It's like us.
Yeah. Yeah, if
we were creative geniuses.
Similar.
That's true. Yeah. If we had talent, their talent.
Exactly, yeah. So, it's just a delight to see them, really. They were in fantastic form.
And Keely was there?
Keely was there, Freddie Highmore, Shalom Brun Franklin.
Great lineup.
Who was in previous, The Tourist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And a young guy called Devon Terrell, who's an Australian hunky. Devon Terrell, who's in it.
That's his full name.
Who plays Shalom Brun Franklin's brother in the show. And what we can say is Keeley Hawes plays a gun-toting, kick-ass action heroine.
Love to see it.
Yeah.
We've seen Keira do it in Black Doves.
Right.
Why not Keeley?
Now, Keeley has a go, in this. Yeah. So that's the premise. And that's what I've been watching this morning. But in addition to that, I've been watching The Bear.
The Bear, all covered in hair.
Exactly.
How far are you through?
I'm through to episode 8.
Oh, okay. Doing well.
7 is this year's key episode, I would say, in terms of it's like nearly an hour long, I think. It's the wedding, you know, there's this wedding going on, two of the characters are getting married and in Kami's family. And everyone's there. Whether they've been invited or not. Yeah, whether they've been invited or not. Some of them haven't even been invited and they kind of like crash it. Jamie Lee Curtis is back as the mum. Loads of actors are back. Yeah.
Carnage.
And it is carnage in the most brilliant way.
God, James,
I was enjoying.
Get your blood pressure tablets ready because I think it's going to be super tense.
It is tense. It's very much about how everyone. There's two characters in particular who.
No spoilers.
No
spoilers.
I'm not naming them. Just two characters who just go at it, and it's like, oh, amazing! This is amazing.
Hang on, two people in The Bear arguing with each other. Surely not.
I know. Who'd have thought? So I was enjoying. I think all round. I'm really enjoying the series. I think it is probably marginally better than. I mean, I really enjoyed the last series. I'm not one of those who slagged it off. We talked about this one in a review. Mm. But I think it's feels slightly more. I think there's more at stake in this series. They really rat. I mean, literally the countdown clock, you know, to when if they don't sort this fucking restaurant out by the time the clock lets in, then that's it. It's just over.
Now, question: you guys got sent a clock?
We did.
Yes.
Are you using it? Does it work?
It does work. It has every second counts engraved on the top of it.
I don't. To be honest, I don't know how to use it.
I mean, it's a countdown clock. You just press start.
I know, but. But you have to.
Was it counting down when you got it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. That was counting down to. And I, of course, posted it too late after the series started. So the countdown clock was irrelevant at that point. The best thing is we got the omelette pan. The pan is properly.
It was Do you know what? I have made an omelette in that pan.
Oh, I've made scrambled eggs. I made scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
It inspired me. And it's
a lovely omelette pan. And Matty Matheson cookbook.
Yes.
Which had soups and sandwiches.
It's a very good package.
Yeah.
I'm so happy for you.
Now, there's one other thing I want to mention about this series of The Bear. Now, is this a spoiler? I'm going to ask.
Oh, hang on. Are you going to spoil it for me?
No.
I've not seen all the episodes yet.
What episode are you up to?
I have only seen the first, I want to say 3 or 4, because I haven't watched any more since we reviewed it.
Is an actor, the return of an actor, is that a spoiler?
Probably.
Oh.
You're not allowed to say it.
Can I just warn people then?
No, because I don't want to know.
I won't spoil it for you.
No, I don't want to hear it.
It's just so...
No.
Your face is so sweet.
You can't do it.
It's so annoying because...
I deny you.
Okay, it's so annoying because...
Why do you need to, though? Do you just want to be the first one to observe it?
No, because it really perks up the show.
Well, why don't we...
Okay, right, that's enough. Okay, that in itself. Okay, cool, we know that.
Yes.
I think we should have a spoilery chat on Pilot Plus at some point, so we can really get into it.
We should.
Yeah.
Considering the whole thing's out, all out for people. So, we should definitely do that.
Probably not this week because we're doing Buffy, but maybe next week.
I forgot about effing Buffy. bloody Buffy. Bloody Buffy.
Talking of which,
the other thing I'm going to mention, it's not a TV show.
Oh, God.
No, I know. It's
the greatest TV comedy character of all time. Alan Partridge is back in a whole new series of From the Oast House.
That's fine.
You thought I was going to mention some.
I mean, it could have been anything.
Film,
honestly,
football,
a sporting event.
No,
yeah.
I only review films on Sir magazine. Anyway,
plug.
The new season of From the Oast House, which is his podcasting, because it's actually what it really is a spoof of podcasts. In an audiobook form. You can only get it on,
Audible.
Audible, thank you. But it's just brilliant.
Have you listened to the whole thing?
Oh, yeah. Like 4.5 hours or something of it. And I've talked to Sarah Phelps online about it. She's loving it. And we were like comparing our funniest moments. There's one where he has to go to court about something. He gets stuck in the porch, in Lynn's porch. Lynn is in it.
Not a euphemism.
No. And he's stuck literally in like a 2 square foot space with a glass.
His idea of hell.
And it's exactly. It's so funny. And people start gathering to see it, to stare at him and insult him because he's stuck in there. And he has to wait
like
for Lynn
he's
to come
in a
back.
Zoo.
And this is entirely audio medium. There is no accompanying.
Yeah, no, it's all audio. Yeah. Totally audio. So it's fun. They kind of use that audio quality to him. So he has to like, he has to record the supposed podcast in the most ludicrous places he can find whilst all this stuff's going on in his life.
In places that would make James's head spin because of
exactly.
the quality.
And yeah, the audio somehow is really good quality. So yeah, it's such a joy. It's brought me such joy this week from The Host House. Series 4, I think it is, on Audible indeed. Yes, that's what I've been watching slash
listening to.
Listening to.
Yeah. That's good.
Mm.
You know what? You mentioned Neil Gaiman earlier, yeah, unfortunately.
Your personal friend.
Obviously, in no way connected to that, but I have been watching Sandman, as we all did, because we reviewed the Sandman.
You worship everything that he does.
I mean...
I love you right now, Boyd.
Don't even know what to do with that, for sure.
this is a reprisal for Spacey Gate.
It is. Yeah. Oh, God. I can't emphasize enough how much I do not do that. Mm-hmm. But I have been watching The Sandman because we reviewed it on last week's Pilot Plus, and I'm enjoying it enormously. I am back in the dreaming, and it's grand. So the first tranche of this show has dropped on Netflix. The second tranche is coming at the end of the month, and then there's a single episode which drops a few days after that.
How long is the gap in between?
Well, so it's like 3rd of July, and then they think it's 24th of July, and then I want to say it's like 31st of July.
What's the point?
It's a very legitimate point. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Because even when you mentioned it on Plus, I wanted to ask, but I probably had lost the will.
I think they've retooled this series a little bit, because the format, if you remember the first series, they had like, you spend a lot of time with Dream, but then you would obviously go on these weird tangents, seeing how people interact with Dream, but from their perspective. And I think they've kind of steered away from that in season 2 and made it much more Dream-centric. Mm. So it's, you know, it has a more concrete sort of Tom Sturridge-based, you know, foundation to it.
No explanation, right? Are you just saying that's a side note?
I'm just saying things, just randomly, rambling.
I thought you meant that was a reason why they were doing it in those...
Oh no, I don't think the tranches are connected to that. I think that's part of Netflix's ongoing eventification of their shows, where they attempt to eke out. It's funny because obviously they essentially pioneered this kind of drop all at once binge model, and now they seem to be realizing that there is a downside to that, which is that everything becomes a flash in the pan and it's gone. Mm. So Stranger Things, they're eking out into 3 segments. Mm, you know, one might argue that Squid Game, which was really 2 seasons, has been made 3 seasons, even though it wasn't really.
Listeners, he just did the quote.
I did the air quotes around 3 seasons, yeah. Because it basically is season 2 is in 2 parts.
Yeah.
I can kind of understand it. I think Netflix get away with it because the sheer volume of content they have means that, you know, if it's not this, then it'll be something else and something else and something else and something else. Like, Apple would never do that because they don't have enough content to do it. I think Netflix can get away with it. And also, I rather enjoy the binge model. Like, it's quite fun. I love it. You know, you give me the new series of The Diplomat, I will watch the whole thing in an evening and have the best evening ever.
See, conversely, I like Apple's weekly drop.
You like to have it rationed out. Yeah.
Because otherwise I'm a...
Although you are about to completely go back on that when you say what you've been watching, aren't you?
Yeah.
But so you're going to reveal yourself as a massive hypocrite.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, that's goes that saying. But I'm going to leave that till the end. So instead, I'm going to tell you that I've been watching, for work, Ladies in Black, which is a period drama on You, set in Sydney. I don't know if Boyd...
You and You, or just You?
It's dropping all on You. It might be You and Drama as a weekly.
Interestingly, it is just on You. So You is the general streaming service for all the formerly known as UK TV channels. Most of them are also on, say, You and Alibi or You and Drama, but this isn't. This is just on
That's
You.
That's what I thought. I thought I'd misread it. I read it about 3 times. Yeah. Like, how are they not going to release it, you know?
I would love to have a conversation with whatever agency rebranded those channels and just find out what the thinking was.
Yeah, I think a lot of
people... Do you know what I'd
would.
Like to know? How much they were paid.
That as well.
And then I'm going to offer myself up for consultancy.
100%.
Yeah.
Because it feels like something that's in my wheelhouse to think of.
I think someone else should start up a rival channel called Me. Like, Me and Drama, Me and This. Is it on You? No, it's on Me. Me and You, You and Me. And just like, yeah.
Do you remember that show as a kid?
Yeah,
Me and You.
Like,
it's a lot for you
to do. I love that. Anyway, so yeah, Ladies in Black is a period drama set in Sydney in the 60s, and it's based in a fictional department store and the ladies' wear department of it, and follows a series of characters. It's based on the book by Madeleine St. John. And it follows these women and their lives as they kind of transition and deal with the social changes, some of them better than others, some embracing it, others, you know, reluctant to embrace the swinging 60s. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a solid period drama. Also, I've been watching some factual shows on Channel 4. So The Trouble with Mr. Doodle, which I actually previewed for Boyd, based on the story of Sam Cox, who, as a boy, used to doodle for 15 hours a day, and he became this sort of phenomenon. He assumed this persona called Mr. Doodle and went viral when he was a video of him doodling at, I think, Old Street Station you know, was put on the internet, etc. And he's a fantastic artist, and he's very committed to it, but it's the obsession that's basically taken over his life, which led to a mental breakdown. And this film charts that. And actually, the way it's shot, it's so sort of intense and claustrophobic. It really gives an insight into his mind as him and his parents and his fiancé, now wife, are interviewed about it. And it's really quite fascinating to see how this original passion just became something that, as I say, just took over his whole life and world, and had a damaging effect on his relationships as well. And also Poisoned. So not usually a kind of show I'd watch, but I found
True Crime, is this?
Yeah, well, it's a disturbing documentary about the rise in young people taking their lives with poison purchased online. And this journalist, James Beale, investigated the death of Tom Parfitt, a 22-year-old who did that. And then he kind of teamed up with other bereaved families to shed a light and get to the bottom of the person that was selling it. So it was a method that was promoted on suicide forums, and they were directed to this online shop, which was a front, you know, had other things on it, but actually was a front for this poison that could be purchased. And it's so disturbing and distressing, but obviously it's really important to know that this is happening. And yeah.
This isn't a very you show, is it?
No,
that's what I'm saying. I watched.
Did I force you to watch this?
No. A different publication.
Oh, I see. You wasn't voluntary then.
No, of course not. No, I said no.
I'm going to give you loads more.
No, that's why I was wary of saying that in front of Boyd, because I know.
But what's interesting is that, because you kindly write previews for me that I commission. But it is extraordinary the number of true crime / death-based, without putting too fine a point, documentaries, etc., that there are now out there. It's almost like half of TV now is devoted to this stuff. It's so, you know, like, if I didn't give you that to watch, then, you know, or your other publication, yeah, it would be like, you know, it would be Coronation Street or something every day. But yeah, it's weird. It's quite how much these have taken over TV.
Yeah. Well, Poisoned, I can recommend Poisoned, because it's two parts, and it is just, obviously no one wants to even consider that, but it's so upsetting for the families who, you know, rather than being, you know, receiving any help, their loved ones, they're being literally given the method of doing it. Yes. Anyway, it's pretty bleak. And then finally, the thing that James was alluding to, My Hypocrisy, is based around Smoke. So,
which is, of course, streaming weekly on Apple TV Plus.
Yes.
The format that you prefer.
Yes, it is, James. Yes, you can continue to be smug, because I have been binging it, and I have taken... Right, now, I'm happy to say this. Boyd was right. He gave great advice, specifically to all our listeners, but specifically to me, because I was a bit, you know, anti the first
episode. Couldn't get on with the novel.
The novel writing in the first episode, Taron Egerton, like, dedicating himself to this really shit novel was beyond me. But he had said to me, continue watching it to a certain point. I'm not going to repeat it, because I know people do get a bit grumpy when we say watch to this point, because they feel like it's a spoiler. But if you go back and listen, he did say a certain point that I should continue. And James, you took his advice as well. And he was absolutely right, because you hit this point in the series and then you're like, this is banana crackers. It's insane, but instantly makes it more compelling. And the thing that I hated about it actually becomes an integral part to that. And yeah, I just think, and you also made the point last week, which I have to commend you on it, which is the fact that there is such an outpouring of these crime dramas, right, which are kind of quite pedestrian. And actually, it takes this show doing something quite radical and crazy. Like, there are parts of it that you're like, this is just beyond, like, logic and is ridiculous. Mm. However, it stands out for its ingenuity and the fact that it's original. And now I can't get enough of it. So I was watching it on the weekly, and I got up to episode, I think that 3's just landed.
Mm.
And then I was like, fuck this, I need I need it in my eyeballs. So I even got up early to watch. I think I'm on, how many episodes are there?
9.
Okay, so I'm on episode 7.
Oh, you are doing well. So I've still only seen the first 2 of them. So enough that it's gone back. Well, I got derailed because I had to watch Sandman, so I've been storming through that. Sorry.
Oh, for your best friend.
You didn't have to.
Thank you. I've also finished Squid Game as well, which Boydie and I did a spoiler chat for on Pilot Plus last week. So I had to get through that as well. So I have quite a few things going, and I had to watch a bunch of episodes of Dexter Lannister Resurrection, which I think I talked about. I had to finish my run of those because we're going to review that on this week's Pilot Plus. And I also watched the new season of The Walking Dead, Dead City.
God, this is a lot for you.
Which is out this week, but is embargoed. So I will probably cover that solo so I don't have to inflict it on either of you. Also on Thursday Pilot Plus.
Well, I think you should just prioritise smoke.
Yeah. Because... It's on the sofa list. No, it's not. Do you know what? It's not even on the sofa list. It is on the watching this next list. Like it's on the, this isn't on the sofa list.
It's not on the BS.
This is in the queue. This is on the watch list.
I'm going to tantalise you further by saying that even after that happens, the turning point moment, there's a thing that happens in the end. That
no spoilers!
No. I thought was so clever and so kind
Floyd.
Of... Yeah.
I'm just it makes me want to leave the studio right now just to
right,
go and watch
it. Right at the end. And you're like, oh, okay, like that. Yeah, I don't want to say anymore. Like,
oh, really. There's so much. We have to do a spoiler special on this.
I want to get Dennis Lane on the line.
We should do it.
Co-creator and wrote it.
100%.
Taron Egerton was on the Smartless podcast, which I love. You know, Smartless, which is the three actors co-hosting it. And they get amazing people on. And Taron's on the new one out this week. And he's so nice anyway, which I knew I've been to him a few times, but he talks about how pretty much that point that when he gets offered shows, it has to be something special about them. It has to be, you know, and that's I think his relationship with Dennis Lane, because Blackbird is I think this is better than Blackbird. But Blackbird, which is the previous show they did together for Apple TV Plus, was similarly
wackadoodle
at various in various intervals. And Dennis Lane is a very playful, I think, kind of writer anyway, and it's all about that. Yeah, kind of.
Do you know who I love in this? Rafe Spall.
Oh God, brilliant!
He's fantastic.
Absolute genius. Yeah, yeah, incredible. Brilliant role for
all him, of them, actually. They're all great. But
No, it's amazing. Yeah, considering what a nice normal guy he is in trying.
Which you remember the English, right?
Yes, good point. Very good point. It's amazing. All right, well, he can go from one extreme. He's very good at both extremes. Yeah.
Hugo Blix, the English, he is terrifying.
He is. You're right. Yeah. Yes. That was a good point.
Carry on watching it, James. Please.
Oh no, I will. I absolutely will. That's definitely next on the list.
And that's what I've been watching.
Very good. Okay, fantastic. Shall we have this week's listener question?
Yes, let's. So, truth of it is, I'm choosing it live now.
No pre-warning about this.
No,
one.
But I'm going to go to an email.
Triaging, one might say.
Yes, but I'm going to do it in a fun, even more fun way, whereby Annika has got in touch.
Annika!
She's got multiple questions that she's sent through. So I'm going to tell you to tell me to stop, and then I'm going to stop on one, and we'll just do that one. So, well, Boydo, like a Wheel of Fortune.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Go on. Right, I'm going to... Boydo, tell me.
Now.
Okay. So this question is, which shows do you think have been the most underrated in terms of response from critics or in terms of awards recognition?
Devs, which is Alex Garland of 28 Years Later fame, currently.
And The Beach.
And The Beach, etc. Devs is his epic 10-part series, which I absolutely love, completely... seems to have gone by the wayside of various critics and viewers alike. It's the standout example for
what
me.
What channel?
It was on BBC Two here, but I think it was an FX or one of those top-level channels. Anyway, it's on Disney Plus here now, in the Disney... But it was aired here on BBC Two. Mm. At one point, BBC Two kind of was the place to go for FX shows. They had lots of brilliant ones, but this was the standout.
Can you remind listeners, and crucially me, what it's about?
It's quite difficult to describe, but it's basically about a secret institute within a university kind of thing is doing research into a very extraordinary technology, a new technology, like a world-changing, life-changing new technology. And the kind of character kind of is sent to work there, and it kind of all get, and then there's a conspiracy as to what they're doing, who they're working for, why he's there, what's
happening. Murder.
And it's murder to investigate among the team working there. And it's,
have you seen
it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It basically deals with like time, the universe, and everything.
But it's not, I mean, it's
a very
funny because like,
way.
Would you class it as science fiction?
Yeah.
Right. Well,
on
paper it is, but it's not. It's very grounded. It's very grounded. Okay.
It's the kind of thing where if someone told you this had really happened, you'd have your mind would be blown, but you would also accept it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Honestly, it's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Like they're working on scientific discoveries. But then, I guess it's science fiction you know, from a
yeah, because the thing they are creating tech, doesn't exist. But yeah, it's very easy to understand. Even
it takes place on a university campus. So yeah.
It's dealing with mind blowing ideas, but in the most kind of relatable, accessible. Literally, yeah. Like it's so clever. It's genius. Yeah.
Okay, I'm adding it to my list.
Yeah, it's good. It's very good.
Yeah.
If you're talking overlooked shows. Better Call Saul, without a shadow of a doubt. Not critically, but from an awards point of view.
Oh, right,
that was nominated for, I want to say, 53 Emmys in total, and won precisely none. So in terms of overlooked, I don't think you can get much more overlooked. The fact that Ray Seahorn never won anything is extraordinary to me.
Hmm.
I think
it's interesting how little it really counts in the end, though.
Like what, the Emmy thing?
Yeah.
Oh, because, yeah.
Because it was universally acclaimed by critics.
It was. Yeah.
And I think in all like lists of, you know, greatest TV, it would be up there with Breaking Bad. I like kind of regarded together almost.
Yeah.
So in the end, it was infuriating that it was overlooked so much. But in the end, it's like, does it really matter? Does anyone care? It made such an impact culturally. I think if you make a cultural impact anyway, it doesn't matter.
Who cares? Yeah. I mean, I think they cared a bit because
because
they got invited every year and never won anything.
They were absolutely fucking rocked. Yeah, don't get me wrong. Yeah, I'd have been furious.
But yes, that was definitely an overlooked show. But you're right. Like, I don't think it matters in the grand scheme of things. In the same way that when films don't win Oscars, does anyone really remember? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, does anyone... Like,
I don't remember that bloody film, Apple film about...
Coda.
Coda won Best Picture.
Won Best Picture.
Like, what
I know, there's one night of everyone's going, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's like, this is actually going to happen. This film is actually now going to win.
You know what, it's not a bad film. It's perfectly respectable three-star film, but I don't understand how it won Best Picture.
Exactly, yeah.
Though having said that, Apple are having a pretty good time with films at the moment, because F1 has done extraordinarily well.
Yeah,
F1 biggest opening by far.
What are they having a good time with?
F1.
No, but the what movie. Was that?
Films,
yeah.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yes.
I see what you did there. Yes, okay, fine. Restrict our chat specifically to TV. Something that will come up in the news section, though, about Apple and TV, though, which is interesting. Fuck it, I'm going to say it now. We're going to break down barriers and talk about news. The Invasion is returning for its third season. And I was like, Invasion? Is that still a thing?
Yes.
I was surprised.
I was very surprised. Out of all the Apple TV renewals, I was like, oh, yeah. I remember really liking, I think the
first couple of episodes.
And the first episode of Series 2.
Yeah.
Which had the David Bowie scene. Do you remember the big David Bowie? They used
them.
Yeah, it was a big use of David Bowie.
First season, there was a whole thing. Aliens were coming down, and then there were kids.
Took a long time.
Kids trapped in a bus in a quarry, and there was a bully, and someone climbs up.
Yeah.
I reviewed the first season for Empire, and the second season I kind of watched a bit of, and was like, I don't care. But that makes it like it has the dubious distinction of being the only Apple TV Plus science fiction show I don't watch.
Wow, those
which is extraordinary.
What's so part that of me thinks I should go studio?
Right. Yeah. So they must be doing something wrong. So I feel weirdly like. I'm the problem. Like, I should go back and watch it again from the beginning because I don't know that I'm happy that there's an Apple science fiction show that I'm not watching. It makes me a bit uncomfortable.
I mean, they're furious.
Your
mate Tim...
Tim Cook. My close personal friend Tim.
Yeah, he's going to
these... He's left me a voicemail about it.
Stages into Abbott, yes. Yeah. I guess the point with recommissioning that show is that they could almost do anything with that, can't they? Because basically our premise is aliens coming down to Earth.
They definitely had an ongoing mythology to it, but I don't know why something about it just didn't quite engaged
me. No, me neither. It didn't quite. It was. I enjoyed it while I was watching it, but I didn't. They didn't have enough end of episode drama to make you to kind of force.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't quite care enough. Well, something like Constellation, which they actually did cancel, I really enjoyed. I thought it was great.
Oh yeah, Constellation. Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah.
I think we've digressed from the question.
Does Kay answer the question?
No, because my answer was going to be predictable.
Go on, hit us with it.
I was just going to say, I wish Shrinking had got a bit more love here.
Speaking of Apple shows,
that's coming back.
I just feel like not enough people were talking about it. I think it just went under the radar a bit. Mm.
Did you hear Brett Goldstein did a podcast this week and he talks about how overrated Shakespeare is?
really funny.
No, was that not taken out of context, though?
Okay.
Like, was it?
He's joking, but it's still really
I was going to say, because people were talking about Brett Goldstein comes for Shakespeare. Completely. I was like, I don't think he was.
It shows how humour doesn't translate to news because he's completely doing a bit, basically, about how Shakespeare is overrated. And he's very funny with it. And he gets more and more into this thing. And of course, it's been actually reported because he's so famous now. It's like, you know, Ted Lasso star slams Shakespeare. It's like,
bollocks to the barge.
Yeah.
It's Brett Goldstein.
Listen, we won't answer it now, but just to give you a preview of another question that Annika sent, which made me chuckle, which is, Boyd's takedown of Jim Sturgis. What are the worst casting decisions in TV? That's for next week.
I feel bad about that, because you've watched the tape. What's it called? The tape.
Mixtape. Oh my God.
In fact, we might have to review it, so don't say.
Not might have to. That would be an absolute privilege to review it.
Okay, but Jim Sturgis is the star of that, right?
Yes, he is.
Okay. I'm so sorry, boy.
Did you meet him in your Greek, well, not was it Greek, Italian?
In Rimini, at the Italian Global Series.
He was there,
festival.
Wasn't he?
He wasn't, unfortunately, the young cast members who played the younger versions
of him. They screened it, though.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, I've already watched it, so we're definitely reviewing it for that purpose.
Because
alone.
Kay's already seen it. Yeah.
But also because I might like it.
But also, I actually don't think it is embargoed, so I think we're okay.
Oh, bro.
Which in this day and age.
So she can review it now.
Well, steady.
Don't.
But in this day and age, when literally every single major program is embargoed now.
Yes, this week has been particularly egregious. Yeah,
it's going to carry on like this, people, listeners, but you know.
Don't be so pessimistic. We should fight for change, Boydie.
It's only we've tied ourselves to this format.
Stop being such an eel.
We've tied ourselves to this format where we essentially review stuff in advance of it arriving.
I mean, that is generally how reviews work, but yes.
I know, but funny enough, other shows aren't so obsessed with that, and I'm always freewheeling and reviewing stuff that's sort of been on for like weeks on end. So, you know.
I would argue that a review is most useful when people are deciding whether or not to watch something.
I agree with you. But, you know, other people say they like to hear reviews after they've seen it.
That is true, and some people do. But I do think, you know, if you're already watching the show, the ship has sailed.
It's all right. Open this whole fascinating can of worms, Kay.
That was some semblance of a listener question. Yeah. If you would like yours submitted and pulled out the hat like that, then do send them to pilottv@empiremagazine.com. It's time for this week's guest. And our guest this week is the legendary Mr. Jared Harris, Anderson Dawes of the OPA in The Expanse, Lane Price in Mad Men, Absalom Breakspear in Carnival Row, and of course, lest we forget, Dr. Harry Seldon in My Beloved Foundation. I spoke to Jared just last week about the show, about sci-fi, and about the finer points of applied psychohistory.
He's also in Chernobyl, one of the greatest shows.
He is in that as well.
You just left that out.
I left it out.
Yeah, okay, fine.
I also left out Fringe.
Less important, but you know.
Here's me and Jared Harris. Thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
I am, it's fair to say, low-key obsessed with Foundation. It is, in my opinion, one of the best shows on television, so I absolutely adore it.
I would be very happy to hear you say that.
But for so many reasons. But I think the main reason why I love it more than anything else is it just does not give a fuck. But in the best possible way, in that it makes no effort to pander to the audience, it makes no effort to dilute itself, to compromise its vision. It is incredibly dense, it is packed with kind of mind-blowing ideas. Mm, there are so many strands of narrative to it. Mm. And it's just like, you know, keep up. You know, it has that. And I wonder,
punches up rather than punches down.
Exactly that. And I wonder whether that was something that, you know, appealed to you about it, but also whether that was clear from the off when you started doing this.
Well, you know, Goya would educate himself about all of the latest scientific advances or ideas and concepts that are out there. And he would be trying to figure out how he could fold some of those into the show. Were they going to be useful? Was a nice idea to play with? I mean, that whole idea of the radiant being quantum locked and all that stuff is something that you're throwing that in there and trying to. I mean, the conversations that we had around the scene where when Salvor uses the radiant to communicate with Harry, who's in the vault, and it's the same object, so they both can't have it at the same time. And trying to figure out, just for the way where we were in the two scenes, you know, like, okay, you can't have it now because this person's here. I mean, and is it the same one? Because this one, and it also is something. It was, the conversations were hilarious because we were trying to figure out, basically, there's a bunch of artists trying to understand quantum science, which, by the way, at some point becomes purely imaginative. You know, that level of science lives in the imagination, because you can never actually see it or touch it, or you know, your only way you can demonstrate it is by these really elaborate experiments, you know?
It's like you say, no, it's a four-dimensional object. It has to extend itself into three-dimensional space, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. That was how he figures out how to, exactly.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
That part's exciting. Yeah. But even, you know, even when you look at, say, the very beginning of the first episode, where they made a point that where you're looking at these creatures that have a hive mind, they're sort of, I think, that lizard-like creatures. It's while Gale's voiceover's going on. Well, that's the hive mind is deliberately put there to introduce the idea of the Kleons before you meet the Kleons, you know. So there was a lot of threading of narrative and themes that was going on the whole time, yeah.
And you, I mean, you've read the books as part of your
research. Afterwards, yeah.
Yeah, but like Asimov, genius, I would say more an architect of ideas than of character,
yes.
Right? Like he's not, I don't think his characters necessarily leap off the page, even if his ideas are incredible. But what I think Goya did amazingly here was not only the characters in here incredibly deep and compelling and sort of grounded, but the way there are so many different mechanics whereby you have the same central character spanning centuries of time. And it's something I've never seen before really in anything. And I, you know, from your point of view, you must have been like, because really new ideas, I imagine, come along quite infrequently when you're doing roles.
Yeah.
I mean, what did you think of that?
Well, that sort of came about, which, again, that's actually an idea that has nothing to do with the books. Mm. And it was more a function of the demands of series storytelling, where you have to have a group of characters who are going to continue throughout. Well, you know, I think that at one point they were talking about 8 seasons. How do you keep these people alive for 1,000 years? And he came up with essentially 4 different ways, you know. The genetic cloning is a completely original idea. The sort of going into, I don't know what you call it, when you put yourself in hypersleep.
Cryosleep, isn't it?
Cryosleep, yeah. Another way to keep another character alive. The digitization of consciousness, that one we're more familiar with, you know. And then there's Demisol. So, you know, who's been alive longer than any of us?
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Fascinating character. And, yeah. But you've got multiple Harrys as well, haven't you? Because you've got, for want of a better term, Prime Harry, who is no longer with us. You had Ignis Harry, sort of resurrected Harry, sort of. And then you also have Vault Harry as well. And like, from an acting point of view, how do you distinguish between
them? I call them Raven Harry.
Okay.
Because the Raven Harry is the one who's, you're with in the beginning, goes onto the Deliverance, dies on the Deliverance, and is resurrected on the Raven. So I call that version Raven Harry, and the other one was Vault Harry.
Yeah.
But then in the scripts, they distinguished them by the Vault Harry is Dr. Selden, and the Raven Harry was Harry.
Right, okay.
So he was supposed to be a little bit more human and personable.
Yeah.
And the other one's supposed to be slightly more aesthetic and cerebral.
Vault Harry fascinates me because he's slightly more limited in that his knowledge is limited. And
he's had his consciousness edited, yeah.
Yeah, exactly that. And he's been alone for a very long time, so it's going slightly loopy.
Yeah. Have you seen all of them then?
Yes, yeah, yes. Well, they have denied me the finale of season 3 so far, but other than that, I'm completely up to it. But yeah, I love the idea of him being almost bitter, like he has a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you'd found out that your consciousness had been edited and you thought that you were in control of this whole story and you find out actually you're just somebody else's pawn, that would piss you off. I mean, someone who had that level of an ego where they thought that they were going to be able to manipulate the course of human history for 1,000 years and you find out, oh no, you're not that person. You're not the guy who's playing the chess pieces. You're a piece on the board.
Yeah.
You know, that would piss you off. And also the sacrifices that version has made achieve this goal, you know, and that they weren't trusted with it, which of course is one of the things that keeps popping up. Particularly in Raven Harry's relationship with Gale, is that he doesn't trust anybody. The only person he trusted with the whole story was Raish, but nobody else has the whole story. And people get pissed off that they're not being trusted with everything that he knows.
Yeah.
And so he's pissed off with himself.
Yeah, which is quite a headspace to get into, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that idea also, like as you say, about the sort of the spanning the decades, the plan that goes on, the sort of psychohistory as an idea. Because people do talk about, you know, whether free will exists, whether we are the product of our genetic and environmental programming, and we're just on tracks doing our own thing. And this, I guess, kind of just scales up to a civilization level.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was the whole idea as well about psychohistory and psychohistory. I mean, one of the things that I was, an idea that I was pitching to David was that, you know, at some point you kind of have to tackle, there's certain questions that you have to tackle. It's the limitations of psychohistory and why did they exist? And one of them was, well, psychohistory can't predict the future of an individual, but it can predict the future of large groups of people. Well, you go, well, surely that would be more difficult to do. Predicting the actions of a large group of people would surely be more complicated than the actions and the possible outcomes for a single individual. So why isn't it possible? And I said, well, it's because everybody lies. And that, so the data is corrupted. Because no one can be completely truthful about their own story, because we're constantly re-editing our past as we go through our life. So there is no clear source material for any person's choices in life and how they got there and what happened. So therefore, it's impossible to predict what would happen to them, because the data that you would be using to try and predict it is corrupted.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I always assumed it was more to do with the fact that on an individual level, there's sort of a margin of error. Whereas when you scale it up enough, even if there are a few outliers, the overall trend will go in a certain direction.
Yeah, but didn't, you know, Cambridge Analytica prove that you can actually predict the behavior of specific people?
I mean, that's very true. Yeah, for better or worse, I think, in that case.
Well, that was one of the questions that we were getting last time round about whether or not whether science was a sort of force for good or bad. You know, I think AI was coming to the conversation then. And, you know, AI is a hammer. And you can either build something with a hammer or destroy something with a hammer. So it depends who's wielding the science as to whether it's a force for good or a force for bad. It depends on the intention.
So much of this stuff feels quite topical at the moment because everything's moving at quite a clip, isn't it? So,
yeah.
But you know, speaking of science fiction, one of the things I do love about your career is you've done so many amazing things, from, you know, John Lennon to Andy Warhol, you know, these great sort of King George, you know. But there's been this thread of speculative fiction all the way through that you've kept coming back to, big Fringe, you know, things like Carnival Row, you know,
The Expanse.
The Expanse, which is one of my favorite shows of all time, and I am obsessed with. Anderson Dawes, respect. But you know, all of these things you kept coming back to, and I wonder what the draw of those things was.
I love the idea of, you know, speculating about the future and where we might be headed, and I find that fascinating. And they all deal with it in different ways. And of course, the brilliant thing that science fiction does when it's done well is it's really talking about now.
Yeah.
And it's a way of getting people to discuss what's happening now in a way that they're not going to put up barriers to, because the story happens in the future or a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Whereas if you try and talk about stories that are present tense, people don't want to deal with it, you know? I remember the first time that really hit home was I went to go and see Platoon, which was talking about the Vietnam War 20 years afterwards, and then Salvador, which was talking about something that was happening right then. And people didn't want to pay attention to Salvador, but they were perfectly happy to go and load Platoon with lots and lots of awards, you know? They don't like it. They want to be entertained, which means they don't want to have to look at what's going on right now. So it's a great way of talking about what's going on right now, but by pretending that you're talking about something that's in either the future or the past, or in a completely fantasy realm.
Because even Star Wars has lots of Vietnam in it, has lots of, you know, there's all this allegory and stuff. It's just a prism of, you know, a veneer of speculation on top of it, which I do love. Did you, you know, was this a genre that you enjoyed when you were younger?
Yeah.
You said Greek myth was a thing.
Oh, you were really into when you were younger. Yeah.
Which is a kind of fantasy.
Yeah, it is. A way of trying to understand who we are, why we are, what we do. I mean, you know, it's Greek myth is very much tied into their religion, you know, and their way of worship. And that's, they're all just different ways of trying to figure out to answer the big questions, isn't it?
Just coming at them laterally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, from a storytelling point of view, I love speculative fiction because I think it takes away the boundaries. It's completely limitless. You can do anything you want with it. You can tackle any idea, no matter how, you know, bizarre. It's also transportational. And I think that's, you know, more and more valuable in this age. But like,
when you say transportational, what do you mean?
Well, from an escapist point of view, I mean, like Foundation in particular, there's so much texture to the many worlds and, you know, the Empire and the Foundation, you know, Cloud Dominion, all these things that you do feel like you could go to these places. And I think sometimes, you know, that form of escape is actually a really valuable outlet for people, you know, when the world is basically on fire. But from a storytelling point of view, I wonder what you think makes for great storytelling. Like, is it ideas? Is it plot? Is it characters? Is it, you know, is it lyricism of dialogue and speech? Like, what do you think are the most important components?
I think that if you don't get attached to the characters, you can't sustain a story for a long time, and that doesn't mean that you have to the characters have to be likable or anything like that. It just means we have to be interested or fascinated by them, and you can be interested in whether or not some characters survive or whether or not some characters get their comeuppance. But on some level, we are, you know, the original idea of Greek drama was, and the way that the theaters were built the way they were, was the audience was placed in the position of the gods, and you were watching this human story unfold, and you were waiting for justice of some kind to be enacted, you know? And it was going to be, we all have a sense of what is right and wrong, and what the right outcome should be. And you get sort of sentimental storytelling where everything works out well in the end. But as you get older, you're more satisfied by more nuanced storytelling where it doesn't always work out, or it's worked out in a way that doesn't seem, it seems right but not fair, you know? Mm. Or the people who manage to affect the change, somehow they don't make it, or their sacrifices aren't acknowledged. And that those, for some reason, seem truer, you know? I think if you're able to harness that, people are going to keep watching.
Yeah. It resonates with our lived experience, I think, helps a lot, doesn't it? You have a kind of an emotional connection to it. But I think I'm out of time, but thank you very much. No, it's been lovely to speak to you.
I enjoyed talking to you as well.
That was Jared Harris. Let's go straight into this week's news. Obviously, we covered the big news already that Invasion is returning to Apple TV+. So let's talk about this minor little story that dropped late last night, which is the news that co-showrunner of The Last of Us, Neil Druckmann, has kind of departed the series.
I mean,
in a bit
has.
Of a bombshell.
He has kind of.
Well, so not quite. So he's stepped down as co-showrunner. He will neither be writing nor directing any episodes of the third season. He is still an executive producer, so he is still technically connected to the production. Right. But whether that means anything or whether he, you know, isn't going to be involved in anything day to day remains to be seen. Now, there's been a lot of discussion about this. Is it because they are, like Naughty Dog, the game developer that he works for, they are working on a new game and he's saying he wants to be able to develop his time and energies to developing that game? Could 100% be that? The game might need a little bit more of attention. That could be it. Or, as many people have latched onto, is there trouble in paradise? Is there a rift between him and Craig Mazin? What is going on?
Okay, he is fed up. Too many corridors.
That's it. Yeah. That's it.
So many corridor scenes.
Absolutely not. Not one more corridor. Exactly.
I think he heard my critiques.
Yeah. And he thought not today, say it.
Hasn't matched season one. They've made some various narrative choices that didn't quite work dramatically. They should have. He's I think it's a comment on the quality of season two, I'm afraid, James.
Wow.
I mean, you might have to. What else reason would there be of you to remove yourself from one of the biggest shows on TV, other than there's a creative differences there?
Boy, don't talk
allegedly.
Sense.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, no, I cannot speak for my close personal friend Craig Mazin or my close personal friend Neil Druckmann.
Oh, sorry.
Wow. Jesus Christ.
Aren't you happy you started teasing me about Kevin Spacey?
I'm delighted about this, yeah.
Oh, the shoe is on the other foot.
Unbelievable.
Thank you,
oh, God. Anyway, you know, I can't speak to that, but he's certainly no stranger to criticism. So Last of Us Part 2 got tons of criticism for so many things. Mm. So I don't think, you know, any of the people who reacted negatively to the departure of, shall we say, a major character in The Last of Us Part 2, I don't think any of that would have bothered him because, he dealt with all that the first time around when the game came out. I do wonder
Because obviously when we did Interview Season 1, I spoke to them both together. Mm-hmm. When Interview Season 1, I spoke to Craig Mazin solo, and Neil Druckmann was not available to discuss Season 2.
Conspiracy.
So, you know, I do wonder whether their visions for the show have maybe diverged slightly. You know, like their dynamic I've always found quite interesting together.
That's what they say about us.
Yes, yeah. that is the case. Kay will be stepping down as host of the Pilot TV podcast to pursue her video game endeavors.
I was gonna launch that news at the live.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. Like, but okay, so there's the will we ever know why this happened, how it happened, what led up to it? How long has this been in the works? Because if he wasn't over to do press for it, presumably this is something that hasn't just suddenly happened. It's just been announced, but how long has this been in the works? Because on the one hand, he does have a full-time job at Naughty Dog, and this is in addition to that, and this, I think, is incredibly demanding. So there may be some truth to the fact that he needs to go back. But equally, he has always struck me as someone who is almost like a frustrated filmmaker, like he's very much a storyteller. He's obsessed with Robert McKee. He's really obsessed with the construction of narrative and stories. And I would have thought, like, being involved in TV production to do a long-form live adaptation of this story would be 100% like his jam, like the thing he most wants to do. But then, because it is his thing and he's having to share custody of it, as it were, with Craig Mason, maybe that is a point of friction.
That's really interesting about how interested he is in, you know, structure of these kind of stories and stuff, because I think a lot of people's issue with season...
Corridors aside,
with season two and upcoming season three, what we know about season three, is the decisions to tell certain stories and repeat and kind of tell the same story more than once, often, and ram home's various points again, slightly repetitively.
You mean layer the subtle commentary that he puts throughout
Please
the show?
Please don't start this up again.
No. But, you know, if him and Craig Mazin have different ideas, they're very big decisions. They're huge decisions for these to take with this show, right? You know, how much do you follow the original game, and how much do you make it suitable for TV drama, or make it as dramatic TV as it can possibly be? And I think they slightly dropped the ball.
I mean, you're wrong, but that's fine. That's fine.
But so what I'm saying is, he could easily have disagreed with.
Yeah.
They could have disagreed with each other about the best way to tell the story and various strands of the story. Creative differences, exactly. But particularly interesting that James is saying that that Neil Druckmann is fascinated by Robert McKeon's storytelling structure and all that, because those are, for some people, the flaws of the show.
But there's definitely a distinction in how you construct narrative across like an interactive story and how you construct it on television, which I think he's very aware of as well. But like, look, we are looking for drama in this. Like, we are looking for like, oh, what's happening? It could simply be, oh my god, I'm absolutely exhausted. I've not had time to walk the dog in a month. I can't be.
Maybe
doing this
he just
anymore.
Can't be asked.
I mean, he could literally. Do you know what?
Fair
this.
Enough.
There's so much telly on at the moment. I've got stuff to watch. My sofa list is out of control. I just need a bit of downtime. I can't be doing this all the time.
Who can blame him?
Can't be asked. Could be that. What does this mean going forward? That is the question. So without his involvement in season three, now Craig Mazin, incredible storyteller, you know, we've mentioned Chernobyl already. Like, you know, he's very good at this stuff. So, you know, a lot of people are worried about what this means for The Last of Us going forward. Will it make a substantive difference to the quality of the show? I wouldn't have thought that it will be hugely negative. It might mean that it changes going forward. Who can say?
Who can say?
Big news, though. Big news.
Loath though I am to bring up The Last of Us again.
Yes, Kay!
I'm going to tell you that its star, Bella Ramsey, has actually been signed up for a new Channel 4 series, which is written by Daisy Haggard, will also be directed by Daisy. It's called Maya, and apparently she will play the teenage daughter of Anna Haggard, and she's forced into a witness protection program to escape a life-threatening danger, and both Anna and Maya have to leave their London lives behind, taking on new identities and relocating to a small rural town in Scotland.
Good.
It's also
Daisy Haggard is great.
It's also
Bella Ramsey is great.
Yeah, they are. Also, we should say a two brothers production, Harry and Jack Williams, who
full circle.
Writers of The Assassin. Yeah, it's very exciting though. Yeah, they've worked together before. Back to Life was a Two Brothers production as well. So yeah, what a lineup, fantastic lineup.
And it's the directorial debut for Daisy. But has she written other stuff before?
Yes, she wrote Back to Life, the aforementioned.
And was she Breeders?
Starred in Breeders, didn't write it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We don't talk about Breeders.
let's draw a veil over Breeders.
Yes. But, no,
Breeders spoiler special?
I thought she'd written it,
No, she's just in it. But she's in Boat Story as well.
She was in Boat Story as well, yeah. And this is also, did you say, this is it's a drama, it's an hour long, 6 hour long episodes, which is definitely new format for her. She's definitely, Back to Life was half hour, kind of comedy.
Comedy-ish, comedy adjacent.
But yeah, this is a very exciting project.
Speaking of things that are comedy adjacent, and crucially for the benefit of awards voting bodies, not a comedy, The Bear, which we've already discussed, has in fact been renewed for a fifth season. Now, when the fourth season went out, as I said, I haven't finished it yet, but you know, a lot of reviews were saying, if this is indeed the final season, it provides an amount of closure, it would be absolutely fine as a final season. But it was very ambiguous. It was not said that it was continuing. It was not said that it was ending. They just said, here's a season. Make of it what you will. Mm. And everyone was forced to draw their own conclusions. But they have now officially renewed it for a fifth season.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't finished it either, but I am up to episode 8, as I said before. And there's so much good stuff in it that... It's one of those things where, funny enough, I was partly thinking they could wrap it up, you know, easily because of the countdown clock thing is clearly counting down to a climax. But equally, there's so many ways it can go. There's so many routes it could go down. And these characters are so, it's such an ensemble now.
Yeah.
I think other thing is that I think did occur to me with this series is that it focuses, it's almost sometimes like he might not be in it at all or barely in an episode and it's focusing on other characters.
I want a spin-off show on Richie,
you know, yeah, they all get a really good shout, shall we say. All of these supporting characters essentially get a really good go and some of them get their own episodes pretty much. And so it can easily go on for more serious seasons, yeah. And it lives up to my general theory about if anything gets this popular and makes this much of a cultural impact, it's definitely going to be renewed in the world of American television because...
As long as the stars / creators don't have other things they want to do.
Yeah, they all clearly love it as well,
yeah.
I think.
But also, like, you and I probably need a pancake pan to go with our omelette pan.
That's true.
So it's actually...
Yeah, that's true.
It's good.
Yeah.
Right.
It can collect the whole...
Well, maybe you should make me some omelettes and pancakes with your pans.
Oh, okay, look, once you've brought in the Pilot TV cake, which you've been promising us for how many episodes, I'm not entirely sure, Bordy and I will make some kind of podcast pancake. I make, just to say, spectacular pancakes.
Okay, then I'm suggesting live event, a little camping stove.
Fairly certain King's Place would have issues with that for health and safety reasons, but yeah.
Listen, I've been watching Smoke. I will get a fire extinguisher ready, and we're good to go.
I'm not sure how closely you've been watching Smoke, but yes.
Your takeaway from Smoke is it's turned you into arson.
Yeah, that's it.
The possibilities of fire.
It's turned me into someone who's hungry, who wants pancakes, and is willing to use a fire extinguisher if needed. Some cancellation news.
Oh.
Sad face. Well,
is it Neil Gaiman?
Your friendship with Gaiman? No. Netflix has cancelled The Residence and Pulse. So, if you remember, The Residence was the show set in the White House. It was a murder mystery. I wasn't in.
No, I'm the only person who liked it.
You are very much the only person who liked it.
James and I were not fans.
No, it was very dull.
Also, Pulse, which I think we enjoyed more.
I'm surprised
more
by Pulse.
Than
yeah.
The Residence. Now, the medical procedural.
I was going to say, for those of us not, this is the one with Willa Fitzgerald, wasn't it? Which was actually pretty decent.
Yeah, it was very procedural, though.
Yeah, it was very procedural. I didn't watch any more episodes.
No.
I quite enjoyed it, mainly because she's quite
compelling.
Clearly,
no one else did either.
No,
yeah,
but then I wonder whether it exists. I'm certainly not in the UK. In the Shadow of the Pit.
Yes.
And I wonder if it coming out in the same year as The Pit maybe was the end for it, because The Pit has been a massive hit.
Can I tell
obviously
you,
we wouldn't know because it hasn't aired in the UK.
I had discussions in Rimini about that because people were coming up to me going, oh, have you seen The Pit? And I was like,
no.
Shut up.
Kevin Spacey was awesome.
Boy, don't flip-flop like that. You've been helping me with the gaming situation.
Look at him.
Right.
He's going full
James,
last man standing, playing us against the middle.
You and I now unite against him.
We're allies now against Boyd.
Kill.
It's an ever-changing...
shifting dynamics, yeah.
Yeah, you've gone full fistful of dollars, which is ironic because you, in fact, have a fistful of many dollars being very, very rich. So.
Slam dunk.
Yeah.
High five.
So that is, that's all the news. Those two cancellations. That's what I'm ending the news with.
Oh, you're ending
my
the
own
news.
Personal news.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Unless you've got more.
Well, one of your favourites, Eve Miles' new show, BBC issued their first look pictures, The Guest, which is coming to BBC One soon. It's got a really good cast, actually. Gabrielle Creevy, Sean Daniel Young, Emmett Elliott, and it's a four-part propulsive thriller written, created, produced by Matthew Barry, who did Men Up, which was very good. And it's about the toxic and beguiling relationship between a successful business owner, Eve Miles, and her employee, Gabrielle Creevy. Rhea's never had the time or opportunity to think about what she might actually want from the world, so when she starts cleaning for Fran, she's intoxicated by this confident and self-assured woman.
You would be. It's Eve Miles, right?
Yeah, exactly. Eve Miles. Can't go wrong.
I've just had a text from my close personal friend Jennifer Aniston, who says, I hope you enjoy the episode of the morning show that I sent over to you. But she also wanted to let me know that she's doing a new show on Apple TV Plus. Have you heard this?
No.
She has her own
show. Yes.
Yeah, she's doing a new show. It is called I'm Glad My Mom Died.
Mm.
It's a new show that's coming up. And it is
Merman production, isn't it? Sharon Horgan's company.
Yes.
Yeah. And it is inspired by Jennet McCurdy's memoir of the same name.
Mm.
Jennet McCurdy is not someone I am familiar with, but apparently she is most famous for her role as Sam Bucket in Nickelodeon's teen sitcom iCarly and its spin-off Sam and Cat, neither of which I have seen. But anyway, this is the memoir was essentially, it was published, I think, in 2022, and she recounts her life as a child actress, as well as the psychologically abusive relationship she had with her mother, who died in 2013, and it also deals with her struggles with addiction and eating disorders. And Jennifer Aniston is playing said tyrannical parent.
Yeah.
So,
it's great role.
An interesting role.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Mm. XOXO Jen.
Well, crucially, did you ask her about was it the 8th or 9th of August?
I can text her back. Can you come? Come to the live
show. She's already blocked you.
Yeah,
are you kidding?
It's true. Any other news?
No.
No. Okay, I think we are officially done with news. So let us move on to this week's reviews. And first up, we have Foundation. Yes, indeed. Season 3 of Foundation, in fact, the most impenetrable and yet brilliant science fiction series on television. Now, we had a discussion beforehand about whether or not Kay would watch Foundation, whether I would subject her to Foundation. And I put it to her that she could either watch the new series of Foundation, and I provided a link to a brief summary, a kind of story so far link that was on YouTube to get her up to speed, or alternatively, she could just watch the summary and not watch the show because I didn't want to subject her to it.
Okay.
I then suggested that as punishment for not watching it, Kay should bring us up to speed on what has happened in Foundation so far, for my own personal amusement. But the look that I was then given suggested to me that that would be a terrible idea and might end in my early death. So instead of doing that, I am going to attempt, and I'm literally just doing this off the top of my head, so this may go horribly bad, I'm going to attempt to explain to you what Foundation is about.
I don't know what's worse.
This is what the listeners want.
Foundation explaining to you.
Yeah, go on, fine.
Okay,
because I can just put the mic down as well.
I'm going to try and do this because, and this partly comes about because we were having to put out a tweet recently, and Harry, our social media editor on Empire, asked me to essentially condense the Foundation plot down to a single sentence, which I was spectacularly incapable of doing because it cannot be done. But broadly speaking, it takes place in the future.
How far in the future, by the way?
I genuinely don't know.
No,
this is information
it's a long time in the future.
Yeah, so it centres around a galactic empire based on the capital, which is the planet Trantor. And it is led by the Cleonic dynasty. So essentially, these are clones of the Emperor Cleon the First. And Cleon the First, in the sort of the most narcissistic act imaginable, decided that he would like to rule in perpetuity. So he is ruled by a series of his legacy, as you will, was carried on by clones of himself. And there are always three of his clones on the go at any given time. A young one called Brother Dawn, who's played by Cassian Bilton, and he's essentially being trained to rule. There is the current main leader, which is Brother Day, played by Lee Pace here, and he's the one essentially in charge of the day-to-day Empire stuff. And then there's Brother Dusk, who's the one who's recently retired, and he's played by Terrence Mann. Yes.
What is it with these shows, like Sandman and this show, having all the characters beginning with the same name, Lesser?
What, Dawn, Day and Dusk?
It's ridiculous.
D's.
It's entirely pointless.
Yeah.
They're very D-centric. They've got so many characters, so try and remember all... Anyway.
Oh, I love it. They also have an advisor called Demazel. Demazel's a great character. She's played by Laura Byrne, and she's like the last sentient robot in the galaxy, and no one knows she's a robot. So she's essentially eternal, has been living for centuries, but is also kind of trapped between her programming and her duty and these weird religious beliefs she has. So she's in a state of constant existential torment and angst. She's also fucking cold-blooded and brutal and kills the shit out of a load of people. Fascinating character, one of the best. She's really good. So Harry Seldon, Dr. Harry Seldon, which is, of course, Jared Harris, is a mathematician and a very, very brainy man. And he comes up with a mathematical formula called psychohistory. And what essentially is, it's working out through mathematical trends what the future will be, but not for individuals, but for civilization. Like, he can predict the trends of civilizations. And he predicts, based on psychohistory, that the empire will not only fall, but humanity will slide into a kind of millennia-long dark age, which will be awful for everyone. According to psychohistory, that cannot be prevented. But there is a way of shortening that dark age to a more manageable length. And the way
How long?
Do that, can't remember off the top of my head, it's still quite a long time. The way to do that is to set up what they call a foundation, which is essentially a repository of knowledge. And he wants to go off and do that sort of thing. Lee Pace obviously tells him to get fucked, but ultimately relents after there's a big terrorist attack on Trantor and says, fine, as long as you don't make an arse out of yourself, fuck off to the end of the universe and make your foundation, do whatever you need to do.
The terrorist attack, by the way, which killed how many people?
Oh, like millions.
Millions,
yeah.
Millions
of people.
In one sequence.
It's a whole thing. And frankly, we find out more about the terrorist attack this season and oh my fucking God, let's just say there's a whole thing there. Okay. So Harry goes off and he gets this sort of protege called Gail Dornick, played by Lulu Bell, and she wins essentially a competition. So think of a bit like University Challenge, to become his protege, and she helps him out.
It's more like the X Factor.
A bit like the X Factor, yeah. Yeah, yeah, like Trantor's Got Talent, if you will.
Yes.
And so she becomes his protege, and they go off to this place called Terminus to essentially start the foundation. Now, it all goes a bit wrong, and Harry Seldon gets murdered. Gail Dornick gets framed for said murder. She gets put into suspended animation, and he's dead. And then the plot skips ahead like 100 years or something. And so, meanwhile, on Terminus, the foundation is being built, and Gail Dornick's daughter, Salvor Harding, is essentially taken over there as a sort of sheriff. We always see Empire, because Empire is just a cycle of clones. So Lee Pace is always around in one guise or another, even though he's playing different versions of Cleon the First, essentially. He's a new Cleon. Harry Seldon, meanwhile, gets resurrected. I still don't fully understand how that works, if I'm honest with you. But also, there's a version of him that exists inside this thing called the Prime Radiant, which is almost like a projection of him, which has limited memories and doesn't really have access to all of his knowledge. But he's quite useful, and there's a big sort of monument thing that he sits inside called the Vault. Anyway, a whole load of thing happens in season one, but suffice it to say, it skips forward and then skips forward again, and then Gail Dornick comes out of suspended animation. She meets her daughter dies, she meets a load of psychics called the Mentalics. She sets up a second foundation on the planet of the Mentalics. That's a whole thing as well. And essentially, time goes on, and as time goes on, we find out that the Cleonic dynasty, the Cleons, someone's polluted their DNA. So they're all starting to deviate from the original template of Cleon the First. So they're becoming a little bit mad. So in this new season, Lee Pace's character, Brother Day, has entered his Lebowski era. So he essentially runs around with a big beard and flowing Jesus locks in a cardigan or a bathrobe, stroking a ferret.
Cardigan?
Absolutely, yeah.
He's wearing a towel.
And stroking a ferret, and he's getting off his tits on mushrooms. Like, it's actually quite funny. So he's gone completely, you know, off the reservation. And then the mule arrived. Now, the mule is played by Pilo Asbeck from Game of Thrones, not an actual mule. And he is like a psychic space pirate. And he has come to shake up the galaxy. And that's essentially where we are with season three, the arrival of the psychic space pirate called the mule, and the decline of Empire and the rise of two foundations. And that, broadly speaking, is what Foundation is about.
See? Just two words. You're welcome. That's given you so much more pleasure, hasn't it? Than if
I quite
it.
Enjoyed it.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know if that made sense.
It was my gift to you.
Anyone listening to
this. It was
this.
A load of words.
Yeah.
And they were in the right order.
But I'd be fascinated to know how many of our listeners actually watch Foundation. Because my thing with Foundation, it is one of the best and most rewarding shows on television. But I also think it is the most impenetrable show on television and the hardest to follow. Because it is so fucking dense. Like, Harry Seldon, he was resurrected. How did that happen? I have no idea. I even fucking Googled it. Nobody has a clue. Nobody understands it. It doesn't make any sense. It involves another mathematician.
I dare to suggest there's a flaw in the writing.
Yes, I was just about to... I was going to say... The thing that you're celebrating, I think, is a flaw.
I mean, you quite be right, but I think a lot of these things, they're hinted at and layered in, and then we will get to it later, I think, is a lot
will
of
we?
It. At some point, we will understand.
Will
because
we?
The thing with the books, Isaac Asimov's books, is they are very idea-centric. They're all about very big, hard sci-fi mathematical ideas. I have them all, and I have flipped through them. I have not read them in detail.
Oh, these are the ones on the shelf.
These are the ones on the shelf. I have lovely Folio Society editions, by the way. This, what David S. Goyer has done with this is really interesting because he's really made it character-centric. And one of the geniuses of this is if you've got plot that constantly skips forward centuries, because this is 152 years after season two, you need constants. And people like Lulu Bell's character, Jared Harris's character, Lee Pace, Cassian Bilton, you know, Terrence Mann, they're constants. So it gives you anchors in the world, which I think is really important. Also, it looks beautiful and incredibly expensive, which is kind of a contentious point, because David S. Goyer, who has been the showrunner for seasons one and two, this show, when the writer strikes happened in 2023, this production on this third season stalled. And when it picked up again, he had a big fight with Skydance, the production company, over the budget. And as a result of that, he stepped down as showrunner. Now, he's still connected. I think he's writing episodes on this. He's still involved. But I believe, I think it's Bill Bass, the producer, he's now the showrunner. So I was quite worried about this season, because I thought, ooh.
Isn't Skydance, you know, trying to buy at the moment, like Paramount?
Yeah,
it's mental.
Yeah,
this is like a
it's Paramount,
crazy.
Which apparently is worth less than OnlyFans. Oh, true story. God.
Yeah, I mean, you straddle both, obviously.
Obviously, quite literally. I'm on both.
Yeah,
but the quality, I would say, and the ambition has not dimmed.
No. He didn't showrun this series.
He did not showrun this series. I guess the beginning of it he would have done, but he stepped down when it picked up shooting again. So
I mean, I think it's actually quite simple, because in the end, it's just. This guy's predicted, like, really bad things are going to happen to humanity.
Yes.
And these various people are trying to stop that from happening. And other people are enacting that to happening. And then, especially when the arrival...
You should have done that intro. It was much quicker.
But especially when the mule character arrives, it really puts into focus that, really, this is like an old-fashioned... He's just like the big bad...
He very monster. Much is.
You know, he's the Darth Vader. And in fact, I was struck by how Star Wars-y the show is.
Well,
like, not only in terms of, like, the way... They assign plot lines to characters, and the way bad, nasty, evil. There's a bad, nasty, evil character who's trying to destroy everyone. But in the, like, the racing, there's one like chase in vehicles that fly across. Do you know what I mean? The floor, whatever they're called,
like
Star
speeder
Wars.
Bikes.
Like, thank you. And visually, it's got that kind of like Star Wars grandeur to it.
Well, more like the prequels, because it's very CGI.
Yeah, it's very CGI, but more sophisticated in this day and age.
But that guy you talk about, Pilo Asbeck's character, the Mule, I enjoyed him for what he was, but weirdly, he feels quite basic for a Foundation character, because most Foundations of characters are very ambiguous and complex. He is kind of neither. So he's a weird outlier in the cast, because he's a very traditional villain.
Yeah, he is. I was surprised.
And this show doesn't normally deal in that.
No. But it's fun. I mean,
he brings the fun. if not the deepest character.
Yeah. I think the shame of my simplistic, you know, summary is, obviously there's all myriad complications of the Empire versus the Foundation and the Second Foundation, and what the fuck they're all playing at, and why, you know, the triple clone of that thing is why like Lee Pace, right? For example, Lee Pace's character, why does it completely change personality from one era to the next? Like, what, to what purpose? It reminds me of my what was the other show we did recently that I got confused about?
Sandman.
Thank you, Sandman. It's like things happen and you're like, yeah, but why are these things happening? And in traditional dramas or stories, things are explained. I think the writers feel they need to explain things more clearly than they do in this kind of genre, whereby, as you said with the death of what's his name's character?
Harry Seldon.
Harry Seldon. Yeah. You're supposed to just go, oh yeah, he's resurrected, we don't know how and why, and we just have to go along with it. So there's a lot of that going on in the show. But what I was about to say was, in my rambling, almost as rambling as your explanation, is that I think if people are put off by the... I don't know what Kay thinks about this, but if people
I have
are
a good
off,
idea. I have a good idea what she thinks about this.
All right, but my feeling is, if you're put off by the seemingly complicated array of characters and who they are and what the fuck they're doing and what is this whole thing about, and big ideas like the fact that one man can... In fact, not just him, but various people can work out what's going to happen in tens of thousands of years' time by doing some maths on a... doing some Goodwill Hunting-style maths on a sheet of paper or whatever, then there's a lot of fun to be had despite all of that, because you've got like Lee Pace's character, who's completely ridiculous and has a really good time. Like, season two opened with him fighting naked for about 10 minutes.
He's wonderful in this.
But the point of it is, I won't even get to that point.
Right, well, I wonder whether, you know, I'm happy to embrace the complicated nature of it, because there's enough fun stuff going on as well. For me,
so I think ferrets,
but also like the mule character, I warmly welcome that, Arrival.
Who doesn't love a psychic space pirate?
His first scene, right, where he is very good in terms of it being shocking and violent and blah, 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 with Thingy from The Office.
That's right.
Yeah, right. I really enjoyed this first episode, and I watched another one as well, the first two episodes. As opposed to other shows, which James loves, which has a perverse obsession with, which is always over the top and ridiculous, I can actually see why you and people like you love the show.
People like
you.
There's a grandeur to it visually. It is beautiful to look at, and the sets and the CGI, as opposed to Sandman, the CGI in this...
It looks very expensive,
it is very high level, In Sandman, it was like, whatever, you know. In this really...
I'm so sorry to Sanjeev Bhaskar having to listen to this again.
Yeah, Sanjeev. So I really enjoyed it, despite... barely knowing what was going on, and you're right, the summary, which I think is available on Apple TV anyway.
Yeah, it's on YouTube,
is helpful. But I, even though I'd completely forgotten about lots of things that I'd watched in season two, it's one of those shows that just hanging out with those characters and being in this world is entertaining and interesting enough for it not to be to worry too much about the ins and outs of every single little detail of which characters are doing what and why and all the different settings and plot lines and planets. And so I'm enjoying it.
It's been a couple of years, it has to be said, since the last season. And you do almost feel like you need to do a night course, a kind of foundation in foundation in order to get up to speed. Yeah. So rewatching the first two is probably not the worst idea if you have the time and the inclination. Other than that, I would say reading detailed episode summaries is almost mandatory if you want to get back into this, because there's a lot. But then maybe your memory is better than mine. I don't know.
Oh, no, absolutely not. We all know that. Yeah. Yeah.
Foundation, then, Kay, if you wish to watch it, you can find it on Apple TV Plus.
So you didn't watch neither of the, just to check,
You watched the little, what's it, the previously on Foundation thing, didn't you?
The YouTube thing you said I had to watch.
The mandatory thing. Was that more or less clear than the rambling nonsense I gave you just 5 minutes ago?
Do you know what? I watched it. There's a load of characters beginning with D. There's a mule that isn't an ass, and then they get into metallics, and that's it. Do you know what I mean? Like, do you know what's happened is that first episode of series one was so confusing.
It's so traumatic for you.
And so traumatic, and made me, and consequently so angry, and then your perversion in making me force it upon me, forcing Foundation on me when. I think it's just all, come together in the way that now my brain will not allow a single second of it.
In case you are interested in a little bit of friendly rivalry, when Steph Seelam was on this podcast, when she was last here, we got into a bit of a back and forth about the accessibility of different types of shows, and me in comedy and her in science fiction.
Yes.
And I roundly challenged her to open her mind to that. And so she tested me afterwards and said, before I come back on the podcast... tell me what that show was again. I'm going to watch Foundation.
Oh, good.
So she said she's going to watch the beginning of Foundation for the next time she comes
on
this podcast.
Do you know what I say to her? Good luck with it. Good luck to her.
You know what? I'm going to persevere as well, because I think I kind of opted out of the previous two series halfway through, pretty much. Like, I couldn't be bothered, which I know you find offensive.
I do.
That means there's a half.
Wait, is this series three?
This is series three.
We're reviewing series three.
Yes. Yeah. What? Was that just another revelation?
No, wait, did you watch series one, episode one? It's more that, earlier when I was accused of hypocrisy.
Although, to be fair, we did do Squid Game Series 3 and we did do The Bear Series 3.
The main reason
we're doing it this week is everything is embargoed.
Exactly. Okay, all right, fine.
One of the few unembargoed shows that we have. But what I was going to say was, I think I am going to carry on watching this because I think I'm going to really enjoy it.
So yes, I do too.
I may go to the dark side and...
I'm happy.
I'd be fascinated to have been in the discussion with this. Should we embargo Foundation? They probably went, you know what? What's the point?
Exactly.
No one's going to understand it anyway.
Do you know what? Funny you should mention that, because one of the publicists did literally say to me, are you reviewing Foundation in Heat? Asking about coverage in Heat. And I was like, yeah. So you do realise it's not embargoed. You're fine to run. Well, it's embargoed to one date, but it was run for publication. I was like, yeah. He goes, literally wanting to ram the point home that we're allowed to review this fucking program. Please, God, everyone. Because I was looking at the responses online to this third season have been overwhelmingly positive.
It's amazing. It is amazing.
So I feel like I've got to get on board.
Yeah, you definitely should.
Also, just on a side note, it is worth noting, I think this is the most weirdly accessible of all the seasons.
Oh, I agree.
It has a very clear through line, a very clear villain.
That's partly because of the villain. But
isn't the problem, though, that because there's so many characters and so like, and there's two seasons have passed where it was just impenetrable, that you get to series three and it's like, it's not really an entry point, is it?
Well, to a certain extent it is, in that there's a soft reset almost every season because each season skips ahead 100, 150 years, 200 years. Mm. By definition, you have an entirely new cast of characters with entirely new stories. Right. Now, some persist, like the robot and the Cleonic dynasty and people who've been in cryosleep.
And the mysteriously resurrected.
And the mysteriously resurrected Harry Seldon.
Dude.
But generally speaking, it's new characters with new problems. And this one is, you've got two things, the Foundation and the Empire, and then this psychic pirate turns up who's like all powerful, and they're all fucked. And that's broadly speaking... Mm-hmm. The main plotline here. And so, but this has space opera-y aspects to it that I don't think the previous seasons had.
Oh, yeah.
But I am probably happy to concede at this point we might have talked about Foundation a little more than our listeners 100% would like. So should we put Foundation to bed?
Please, God, yes.
Okay, next up. Oh,
we didn't
God.
Say when it was on. Because it starts...
It's on Apple TV Plus, boy. Yeah. When is it on?
Friday, the 11th of July.
Friday,
2025.
Tomorrow. Thank you. Now we have Ballard, starring Maggie Q... And coming from the books of Michael Connelly, this is indeed the continuation of the Boshyverse. If you're Sean Connery, it's the Boshyverse. The Boshyverse, which began with Bosch and continued with the recently departed Bosch legacy. In this, though, Q plays Detective Ballard, a disgraced cop relegated to a basement to work on cold cases. I don't know if this sounds familiar to you. Only for one of them to overlap with a case belonging to one Harry Hieronymus Bosch. Boydie, what did you think of Department Maggie Q?
Well, you've completely taken the joke from me. Wouldn't it be brilliant if Maggie Q was in Department Q? She should be in Department
We've
Q.
We've got Matthew
well.
Good. We don't need her.
Well,
Q squared.
Q squared. Funnily enough, this is an example of what we were talking about earlier with Smoke.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is that this is a bog standard.
Yeah, basic.
Police procedure.
Mediocre,
perfectly serviceable, better than, what was that other monstrosity we watched a couple of weeks ago? The one where they're gathering all the different agents from the FBI
and
the CIA.
Oh, my God. That was terrible.
That was boring.
Was that Split Second? Was it called or Countdown or something
Countdown,
like that?
Countdown. Yeah, okay. Not to be confused with Channel 4. Quiz show.
That's it.
That was so boring.
Yeah.
I could barely make it to the end of an episode. This is not boring. It's just standard. Well, I wasn't particularly boring. It's just standard fare. It's like, you know, the character. But what's interesting is the Bosch stuff, the Bosch series, managed to be more entertaining than a lot of police procedures because of that character and because of Titus Welliver's performance in that character. This, Maggie Q, it's not her fault, but she's a complete blank character in the middle of this show. Now, I remember meeting, they introduced her, didn't they?
They did, at the end of Bosch Legacy,
etc. And she seemed to be more fun or more interesting then when they introduced her as a kind of extra character in the Boshyverse with Harry Bosch. Now she's got her own show and her own investigations to undertake. Mm. She suddenly got quite boring. At one point, there's one scene where she calls one of her staff who's like into like, says that she can communicate with, you know, dead people basically, and wants to be, and is practically considers herself a medium, and she's furious about it, and brings her in and says, "Oh, you can't talk about that stuff in public, even though it wasn't in public. It was just chatting to her colleagues because people, you know, we won't be able to get the case through because people assume you thought you could do it by a mental, you know, mentalist technique,
psychic.
If you like
a psychic. Mentalic from Foundation,
exactly. Shut up. So what I'm trying to say is." You build this whole thing about this key supporting character in the world of Bosch, and you make her quite dull, and you know, just nothing particularly special about her. She's not particularly funny. She's, if anything, a bit too serious. She takes herself quite seriously. A lot of it is about persuading another ex-police woman to join her gang. Then you just know she will in the end. It's one of those, come on, just get on with it. You know, give her. And then there is this bit at the end of the first episode, which you're supposed to go, oh wow. Yeah, you know, look, and you're like, oh, well, of course that's happening because, yeah, you know, it's Bosch.
You've got to try and revive it somehow.
Fucking Harry Bosch.
Fucking Harry Bosch is a Bosch show. So, yeah, it's not great. And what I meant to say, what I started this whole thing by saying, alluding to, is it's the same idea as Department Q, a team has been formed in this police station, in this time in LA, with these eccentric characters investigating cold cases.
In a basement.
In a basement, while being weirdly, by the way, shouted at by their superiors.
Oh, God, they were annoying.
They were annoying, right? But this shows you Department Q full of invention and wit and charm and surprises.
Think of Akram versus any of those.
Any of them. Storytelling, twists and turns and clever tricks with timelines. This is plodding, relentlessly plodding investigations. Mm-hmm. It's like, given Amazon Prime Video, we'll give them another solid, you know, show. It's fine. It's going to pass the time. It's like a rhyme. It's fine. It's going to pass the time. But oh my God, it's completely mediocre. Yeah. It's fine.
Okay, do you concur?
100%. Terrible dialogue.
Patchy. So bad.
So bad. So bad. I mean, literally.
So bad.
I'll call you. I'll answer. What?
Oh, what? My favourite. Sorry, before
that's
you.
So
my favourite line. Terrible. I did write down my favourite line.
Yeah, go on.
We might have a goddamn serial killer on our hands.
Oh, I know. I know. That's what she said,
that
right?
Is brilliant.
It is honestly toe curling.
It's so bad. Such patchy acting that, you know, and it's not dynamic in any or interesting in any way. I thought, and exactly that, I thought of Boyd's point about smoke, and I thought, this is what he's talking about.
But also, like, not being funny, like, Bosch was pretty good, because Michael Connelly's books are massively successful. Mm. Based on this book, like, they were quite knotty, really interesting things. My understanding, and Bosch Legacy, slightly less so than Bosch, but was still decent, less so towards the end. But this, and I believe these are still based on, because there are the Ballard books that Michael Connelly's written, and then they cross over with Bosch, you know, in the novels. This feels like incredibly basic network procedural territory, just in the way it's constructed, the type of storytelling. The acting is, as has been alluded to, toe-curlingly terrible at times. And some of the line deliveries are just, I was like, oh my God, stop. This hurts my heart. That this is part of the Boschiverse really upset me. But at the very end, because it's a Bosch Light episode. Whereas at the very end, there is the, you know, it is heavily hinted that Bosch will be in the second episode. And that made me want to go back and watch it, because I love Titus Welliver's performance as Bosch, and I love the Bosch shows. I'm not sure I can, because I think it might just make me sad to see Bosch in this show.
Do you know what? This is an insult to Bosch.
Right.
It is.
Wow.
It is.
Oh, yeah.
It's really basic. It's really boring.
For me, this is very similar to FUBAR. You know, all these kind of shows are just so mediocre, and I wonder how they get past.
But this, honestly, and I hate to say it, like, this is the very low end of mediocre. This is bordering on just flat out bad. Like, it's just like, I was bored, I wasn't interested, it had terrible acting in it. Like, it was just,
there's no tiptoeing around.
It was all over the shop. Yeah. Whereas you can have a fairly basic, unsophisticated crime show, which, you know, it's fine, but there's better stuff on. I'm not sure this quite qualifies as that.
What's interesting is the streamers now, I mean, it's a bit of a no-brainer, I guess, especially this one, because it is a Bosch franchise show.
Yeah.
But in general, these bog-standard procedurals that could be on, you know, an American Network show, often those American Network ones work harder, actually, at being decent.
Because some of them are great, right? They're not, you know.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Give us some examples.
Homicide: Life on the Street.
Yeah.
Fucking genius.
Amazing. Yeah. Even the ones that Terry likes.
Third Watch. High Incident.
Oh, CSI.
These were all good shows.
No, it's not CSI.
Law and Order.
Law and Order. SVU.
Has good. CSI was good early on.
Some of the CSIs are really good. Mm. Some are better than others. But yeah, Law and Order SVU, which is Terry's obsession. we watched some of that go on her, you know, back in the early days of this podcast. And I remember thinking, oh, yeah, I can totally get it, because actually they're quite kind of witty and
well-written.
Like, very pacey, quite well-written, quite well-acted, you know, varying. Whereas, yeah, a show like this, and even, I think I give this a slightly more of a pass because I hated Countdown so much, because Countdown was so terrible.
It's not as, well.
So it's not, I didn't think it was as bad as that. But what I'm trying to say is, it's interesting that streamers feel they need to do this kind of show in all its mediocrity, when they could, you know.
But I'm not sure that is even the question here. I think it's that, given that the Michael Connelly books are generally very good, and Bosch was very well received, Bosch Legacy, I think, slightly less so, but you've got good characters that people are familiar with, you've got an established franchise of characters, you've got great source material, So how is this so bad?
Right, yeah. Your point is they've kind of fucked it up.
How have they fucked it up to this extent?
Yeah, it could and should have been
like, this
better.
Should have been a really high quality...
It's shoddy.
Yeah. It's a script.
It needed another pass. I think that's definitely true.
Or just
true.
A pass.
Or just a pass, yes. Ballard, then, which is on Prime Video, when Boydie...
Wednesday, the 9th of July, 2025.
There you go. If you're a Boscheverse completist, it is there for your enjoyment. Speaking of which, finally this week, and straight out of 1992, it's Shifting Gears on Disney Plus, a multi-camera sitcom that sees Kat Dennings and Tim Allen as a kind of estranged father and daughter, plus Sean William Scott, Stifler himself, as a mechanic. Kay, would this automotive sitcom pass your MOT?
No.
Excellent.
Stick the brakes on. No, I mean, this has not been a good week for me in TV. Foundation, they're Shifting Gears.
And Ballard.
Ballard. No, I just
what
think...
What a load of ballards.
Yeah, it's a load of ballards. It just isn't funny. And I just don't think these sort of... studio sitcoms. I mean, look, I'm sure there's someone who's going to be smart enough, funny enough to create one that we're all going to, I'm then going to be like reverse ferreting. But for now, this is not it. It just, it reminded me a bit of how disappointed I was in the reboot of Frasier.
Yeah. Mm.
The script isn't funny enough. The jokes aren't funny enough and frequent enough. The acting's okay, but it's just one of these things where it could be in the background and you can half pay attention and be, you know, occasionally I might smile, but I'm forcing it. It's just not good enough, I don't think. Yeah, I didn't enjoy this.
But did it not feel weirdly like you'd tumbled through time
yeah,
and
course.
Ended up in the early 90s?
Yeah,
yeah, that's 100%. What I'm saying.
Yeah. It's wild.
Yeah.
I just don't think they work in this day and age.
Where did this even come from and who thought this was good? Dan, we talked about this on this podcast before, like why people aren't making live studio audience. I'm assuming this was a live studio audience. It seemed like one. Live studio audience.
Mrs. Brown's
yeah, like multi-camera sitcoms.
Yeah, and there's a few British ones left. Yeah, there's Not Going Out. Is mostly filmed in front of an audience.
Because it felt studio once because you get those slightly awkward rhythms in speech where they're pausing because the audience is supposed to be laughing.
Yeah. I mean, they shouldn't need to do that.
Because they didn't do it in Friends.
Exactly. They didn't do it in Friends. Yeah. There's a lot of things that in this show that they didn't do in Friends, quite rightly. I mean, I've never been a fan of Tim Allen. I find him quite annoying. I never liked Home Improvement, which was a massive show. That was one of, massively talking about the 90s. He ran for pretty much most of the 90s, I believe. And this is like, oh, God. And you know, now I'm, right, I'm about to make a point about his politics. And I didn't actually, I forgot about it until I started looking at reviews of this.
I don't know his politics.
Yeah, he's quite right-wing.
Is he a MAGA?
He's not fully MAGA. MAGA, I think.
MAGA. Am I being too bringing?
Make it to English.
America's MAGA.
Do you know where you've gone? You've got a bit MAGA saying MAGA.
Yeah. He's not MAGA, but he's a bit MAGA.
He's a megalomaniac.
There's a mention in the script about a right-wing kind of politician guy. And he's like a kind of, the character is supposed to be like a grumpy guy fed up with the modern world, fed up with Instagram. Oh, what an inventive idea.
Gen Zers. Yeah, there's a whole rant about like influencers and people on their phones.
So tired. But what I was going to say was, so I haven't, a lot of them mentioned his right-wing politics. He hasn't fully, I don't think he's fully enveloped Trump, so to speak, embraces Trump, but he's definitely like, you know, generally like a Republican. And that none of that is why I'm judging the show, but it's just an interesting aside that this character is basically like that, and is, you know, and it's supposed, and that's supposed to be somewhere inherently funny. You know, this guy's being grumpy about everything, and the very first jokes in the show are about his grumpiness. But it made me sad. This show made me sad because Sean William Scott is a really funny guy, you know, when he's given a decent script. Mm. He was one of the funniest things about the American Pie films, the original American Pie films. Yeah. And he was in some really kooky, stupid comedies that you would have hated, various films. And you know, he was a charismatic, funny guy.
Yeah.
And in this,
I've interviewed him.
Nothing. Oh, brilliant. what for?
For American Pie 2.
Amazing. In this, it's like given nothing character. It's just completely boring. We're all supposed to be excited about the daughter character as well, Tim Allen's character's daughter, played by Kat Dennings. And she's just not funny, and the kids aren't fun. It's just, it's like right from the first second, almost, when they're trying to force the laughs, and they're all acting. I've talked about this regularly, particularly with American sitcoms like this, not just ones that are filming in front of an audience, but actually other ones that are multi-camera, ones with often with laughter tracks or, you know, kind of, et cetera, is this I'm in a comedy acting style, and this does it to an extraordinary extent. We're all in a comedy, so we're all going to go, oh, there's a guy like that, you know. it's excruciating. Yeah. I actually think I hate bad American mainstream studio sitcoms, bad ones, more than anything else.
I think that's
like,
fair.
I think they're my kryptonite, and like more than you hate, you know, whatever the things you hate.
I mean, well, these,
everything. Yeah.
But yes.
Comedy, yeah.
But bad, these ones, and it show again, it shows you how brilliant, even like Seinfeld, I'm mentioning Seinfeld, obviously, but I saw the other week, we were asked about what season, you know, I often say to people, don't start with season one or two, go to season three, but actually, the very first episode does have the blueprint of a really, really good show. And they're all underplaying it. And they're not like, you know, they're not in, everything's in quotes and they're all like coming out with these smug fucking one-liners that aren't funny anyway. They let the characters breathe and just establish themselves.
There's no subtlety.
That's what they did in Friends. Actually, in Friends, the pilot of Friends, you know, these actors were allowed to get to live in those roles and make them seem real to us. These people in this fucking show don't feel real for a second. They feel like
they're just saying lines.
They're all trapped in a studio reading a terrible script. Yeah. It's shit.
Oh my God.
Tell us what you really think, Boydie.
It's already been renewed, by the way. It's doing well. Yeah, it's doing quite well. Even in these times where the common American sitcoms are on a massive decline, there's hardly any of them left, you know. But
you wonder why.
So this has clearly done well enough to warrant more episodes.
How?
Tim
genuinely
Allen's got something
how? On someone. I found this excruciating to watch for all the reasons that Boydie said. A broad comedy is not my thing generally, but this is acutely unfunny, badly written and badly staged American sitcoms from like 30 years ago, and I just don't understand why it's on my screen and why I was forced to watch it. And these are 22 minutes I will never get back, and it's just, it's upset me.
Well, the reason you were forced to watch it is because everything else was embargoed.
That obviously. Is true. That is true.
We wouldn't have gone near it.
No, we wouldn't.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's.
I mean, it was mercifully short.
It was.
So that is.
But
an
still.
Advantage.
Yeah. But oh my God.
I could have made another omelette with my omelette pan in the 22 minutes it took to watch this fucking show.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Shifting gears then.
Oh.
Which is on Disney Plus.
I think it's on then. Now I don't know when it's on. So because I snubbed it.
Boy, it's like it's on Disney Plus. Who cares when it's on? We're not interested.
Wednesday, the 9th of July, 2025. Shifting Gears arrives on Disney Plus, everyone. Go to it.
Wow.
Insane.
Other things that are out this week. The Walking Dead Dead City Season 2 lands on Thursday, which is very exciting. Obviously, I've already seen that. That is on Sky.
Sky Max.
Sky Max. And now. Too Much.
Yes.
Lands on Netflix.
Yes.
Also on Thursday. We will be reviewing that on next week's regular podcast.
Yeah.
We'll be discussing a little bit of Dead City, or at least I will, on Pilot Plus this week. Dexter Resurrection comes to Paramount Plus on Friday. We will be reviewing that properly on Pilot Plus. And The Institute, very exciting, comes to MGM Plus, and that's on Sunday. And I think we're going to do that on week's main show. It's Stephen King adaptation. But that looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Anything else, Boydie?
No, I think you've covered it pretty much. Yeah, I think you have.
Now, this is going to be my favourite part of the podcast.
Yeah, I know. God.
And I get to ask Kay what her pick of the week is.
Well, in a sign of how bad this week has been, my pick, begrudgingly, and without having seen it, Foundation.
Say it again very clearly so that I can make it my ringtone.
No, you've had it once. That's all you're getting. And be grateful that I've said it.
Boydie?
Oh, I mean, Foundation is clearly a masterpiece in comparison with these other shows. It may end up being a masterpiece anyway.
Yeah.
But it's easily Foundation.
Foundation, then, our pick of the week. And dare I say it, our lifetimes. Fabulous.
No.
Oh, God. Well, that's it. We're done. That is the end of the show. If you enjoyed it, please do head over to any of our social media accounts and leave Kay a 5 Foundation rating. I think she would really appreciate that.
I just can't.
Yeah, you can follow her at Kay Rivera. You can follow Boyd at Boyd Hilton, me at James C. Dyer, and this very podcast at Pilot TV Pod. And don't forget, it is pilottv@empiremagazine.com. If you want to address either this listener question type postbag or the big bumper postbag on Pilot Plus, which you can subscribe to and drops every single Thursday. on next week's show, as we've referenced, we'll be covering a lot of the stuff that's out this week that we weren't able to cover, plus presumably some other things, because lest we forget, next week also plays host to Star Trek Strange New Worlds on Paramount Plus, which I have already seen, and we will be covering. Bookish comes to you in Alibi. Yes. That's quite exciting.
Yeah, Kay likes that because she's seen it already.
Mark Gatiss, yes.
Yeah, The Summer I Turned Pretty has its final season arriving on Prime, if you're interested in a bit of YA drama.
Yeah, The Couple Next Door, series two, if you're interested in
You're all over this, aren't you?
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. Anything else?
Mixtape, which is with the aforementioned,
and we definitely should do that.
Yes. Well, we can't review everything.
Yeah. Well, we're obviously not going to do Star Trek, so we can do mixtape.
Unbelievable.
And
too much mixtape. Yeah. Yeah.
That is true. By the rules of this podcast, whereby new shows do outrank returning shows, we may not be covering Star Trek. Star Trek: Strange New Worlds.
Exactly. Deal with it.
Yeah. Which means I will just go solo. I'm going to go rogue and review it on my own.
Of course you will.
But yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say what I think of it. Maybe I hated it. You don't know.
Well, you can't say.
And hopefully we'll never find out. But also, listeners, do book your tickets.
Yes.
Come and see us.
Come and see us at King's Place on the 8th of August. It's going to be epic. We've no idea what's going to happen, but it will be wonderful.
Us three and Jennifer Aniston.
That's right. Jen will be there. I'll ask her to bring, the whole cast of friends. Well, our mates.
Another reunion.
That's it. We'll do it live on stage at King's Place. Be there. Don't miss it. Oh, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Scott Gimple will be on next week talking about The Walking Dead.
Good show.
Yeah. Right, that is it. We are done. Until Thursday for you Pilot Plus subscribers, or Monday, next Monday for everyone else. We're off to enjoy the sunshine. Pilot out.